This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Difficulties, but we are here. Hello, this is Deanna. It's Thursday, January, what is it, 21st? Oh my gosh, January 21st, 2016. This is Spingola Speaks, and as I said, this is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me tonight on RBN. Their website is republicbroadcasting.org. To see the guest lineup and relevant links for this program, please visit Spingola.com. Just click on the website and click on the radio schedule button. Please also visit ScreeningSandyHook.net for information about my newest book, Screening Sandy Hook Causes and Consequences, an expose on big pharma, big government, and the very complicit media. It is not, and I repeat, it is not an endorsement of the official version of that event. I don't know why people say that. I guess it's because they haven't read the book. Okay. Anyway, please also visit SpingolaSpeaks.net, created by one of our wonderful listeners. I hope that you will consider subscribing to SpingolaSpeaks.net, where one may listen to the audio files of my programs. Another option, of course, besides RBN, because we do hope that you support RBN, is Wooly's blog, and that's Wooly's blog. blogspot.com. You may email questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by visiting spingola.chatango.com. We will take calls in the second hour after we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guest tonight is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. Clint, welcome.
Well, thank you. Good to talk to you.
It's always wonderful to talk to you. I have a cough drop in my mouth, which probably is very annoying to people. So let me dispense with that. Well, it's wonderful to have you on the program. I always enjoyed having you as a guest, and always enjoyed listening to your program. Anyway, so what are you doing these days? I know you just wrote an article, which I'd like to talk about, of course.
I, honestly, after, I don't know how you continue to do this, the show and how you did it for so long. Cause I'll tell you what, I've taken the last month off just to recover from doing the research and the legwork to get guests and everything. And so I've kind of been taking it easy, honestly, taking a little break and sort of getting back into my official writing. Other than that, not too much.
As I look back on it, honest to Pete, I have no idea how I put out three, because actually I did have a schedule change, which allowed me to write the last book. But it's a lot of work getting wonderful guests and... You know, but it was at the time I loved it. Mm. I loved talking to interesting people. It was just a joy. And I'm very grateful to RBN for allowing me the opportunity to do that. And, I'm going on 6 years.
Yes, you are. Then you've got John going on, decades?
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know how people continue to do this, because sometimes it just seems like it's like we're not moving ahead, but we are. I think that we really are, because more and more people are actually waking up and saying, I think there's something wrong with this country. I think there's something going on.
I think everybody knows that something is wrong. I think everybody's known for quite some time. The question is, you know, what do you do about it? Because for the most part, it seems sort of like a hopeless adventure to try to do anything about the system that already exists. And so I think a lot of people, I would say the majority of people, have just sort of learned to live with this great big lie that we keep telling ourselves about all nations, let alone our own. And so it's a question of, can people ever come out of the notion of being part of something like this? Can you ever come out of the notion of being a member, an employee, a citizen of something like this corporation we call the United States? Can you imagine any other way? I think is the real issue. And I think that's really what people are striving for today, is the notion that there is some sort of solution out there, but it seems so, you know, incredibly convoluted and hidden under language barriers and official documentation and all these different mysteries and secrets of the state, which, you know, of course, the secrets of the state is why we have secretaries of state, which is the secret keepers. So we people are starting to figure out the secrets, and the secrets really is that the nation itself is a de facto part of the legitimate government. And we're all figuring out that, therefore, we are illegitimate. And this is the crazy part about it. And I think it's starting to piss people off too.
Yes, of course. And I mean, there's just only so many decisions that one can make that just deal with us personally. But when you're a part of the system, and we all are from the minute that we're born, it's very difficult to extract ourselves from it. And I think too that people just feel like, well, there's nothing we can do, and they like to stay in their comfort zone. And because if you actually accept the responsibility that something is going on, and once you know what's going on, you really cannot backpedal and forget about it. Because you're just too deep in. You can't ignore something like that.
Well, and it's this notion, and it's really hard, I think, to put this into any kind of cohesive notion. It's kind of like looking, you know, the only way to see what the Matrix is to wake up and be unplugged from the Matrix. And at that point, you can see, oh, I was participating in this sort of false character, this false identity, and the identity became myself, you know? So it's interesting, really, really fascinating when you start discovering self. What is your self? And how the notion of self has been sort of stolen from us. And they call it our identity or identity, right? So you have the id, the ego, and the superego, and the ego's sort of hanging out in the middle. And you've got the id. And the id is sort of this self, this personification of ourself, this false thing that we call our identity, our straw man, our person, whatever, our status. So many different, it's our name, it's our number, it's our mark, it's everything that makes up, it's our property, it's our credit score, all of those things that sort of make up this id entity, this identity of self, personified into sort of this thing that we act as, and it's a very strange concept. And you realize that's us plugged into the Matrix. In other words, us plugged into the legal system, the legal language, the legal this, the mammon, money, and all of that stuff. And then on the other, and from that, then of course, we get the ego. The superego, I should say. And the ego develops because we somehow have to justify our identity. We say, oh, this country is great, this country is wonderful, even though it's killing millions of people across the world, including ourselves, even though it's got an active biological weapons testing program that it uses on us on a yearly basis. You know, all these different things. And so we have this super ego that's constantly battling the id entity, the identity of our so-called status, our persona, that we portray to others. I'm an employee of this. I'm a member of this church and this religion, this denomination. I'm a, you know, whatever it is. I'm part of this thing, this fiction, and this fiction, and that makes up my identity, my id entity. And our ego comes along, superego, and just in absolute cognitive dissonance, right, just starts arguing the point. Yes, I am this, you know, I can't see beyond that. I have to accept them. So I have to make up all these excuses. I have to make up all of these different justifications. I have to judge other people. I have to do all these things just to justify my existence as something completely artificial, an artificial person, a corporation in a bigger corporation. This is where we stand. And it's a really fascinating sort of look at yourself. And if you can get to the point where I believe, you know, I'm starting to come to where I can now see the identity, I can see the Matrix, and I can see all the legal system. And then I can also see where my ego is constantly battling to justify that existence. That's when suddenly, if you can kill both of those, well, then there's no point in having an ego, and you start focusing on yourself. And that, I feel, is where people need to come. We actually need to start focusing purely on ourselves. And that means, unfortunately, and you know, I don't have anything to sell to people, so I always tell people, look, you are the problem. There is no government is not the problem. Nothing is the problem but yourself. You are the one that has to fix yourself. Only then can you fix others. And you're certainly not going to fix a system that belongs to someone else, that was a creation of some magistrate or some bloodline. You're not going to fix the government. It's never going to be fixed. You're going to have to depart from it peaceably and start your own thing. That is where we are, I think, at this present time. And I think that's what people are actually searching for, is the path, which of course is right in the Bible, but nobody wants to admit it. Everybody uses all these, you know, they say the trivia, follow the trivia method. Well, I hate to tell you this, but the trivia method is in the Bible. Well, follow the natural law. Well, that's from the Bible. Oh, no, 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 follow this, do no harm. Well, that's in the Bible, but that's the satanic version. Oh, do this, do this. Well, that's actually also from the Bible. Everything's a copy from the Bible, but nobody wants to give it any credit. And when you put all these systems together, all of a sudden, it starts making sense. It's logical, it's reasonable, but it's mixed with enough, you know, of the spiritual notion that it balances it out. Because pure logic and reason is what we're suffering from in our sciences and in our art forms. So, you know, I think that's where we are. We're on the precipice of sort of a spiritual awakening. In the Bible, that's referred to as an apocalypse or a discovery, a revelation, a sudden understanding of knowledge that's been hidden for so long. So I think that's where people are right now, and I think that's the path they're looking for, is simply to say, okay, this system is so corrupt, it's unfixable, it was born in corruption, I want to depart this system, because it is a voluntary system, and I want to do my own thing. I want to be a lawful, peaceful person, and I want to, you know, just kind of be a religious man, or start my own this, or do... That's where people are, but there's a barrier there. There's a knowledge barrier. There's a language barrier. There's so many cultural and fallacious concepts that are the barriers to that happening.
Right. And you said something that's very, very important. You cannot fix somebody else unless you fix yourself first.
Nor can you fix someone else's government. And we have to realize this is not our government. We are under it. We're not a part of it. We're its subjects. We pledge our allegiance to the people who created it. And that's the hard part for people, because we've been taught all this patriotism and all this, by the way, patriotism for all intents and purposes just means controlled opposition. That's what patriotism is. People don't like to hear these things, but when you actually go and you decipher the words, a pat riot, you know, a riotous mob that is put pat or kept in place by all of the different things that they give us as entertainment, voting, and all this stuff. This is, we cannot fix a system that does not belong to us. We don't have the right to vote. I should say we have a franchise to vote, but we don't have, we're not electors. We don't actually do anything in this system because we're its subjects, we're its servants, we're its slaves. That is the most important part, because all of this is voluntary.
Indeed, yes. And of course this thing with voting. I mean, who are the people that put these candidates in front of us? I mean, I certainly didn't have anything to do with that, and neither did anybody else. You know, none of the regular citizens.
Well, so, and this is where it gets, for me, like yourself, like so many people out there, you know, I'm always going and I see this massive tree of conspiracies and all these different things, you know, unlawful combinations, associations, trusts, monopolies, all these different things. And you go and you start peeling back one limb at a time and you see everything that's connected to that particular branch, and then you move on, you go to the next branch of the conspiracy. But it's time that we actually understand that, you know, like the title of your book, dealing with the Sandy Hook and all these other shootings and stuff, this is entertainment. Whether it's real or not, doesn't matter. It's entertainment. It's there to keep you occupied. Well, so is the election. The election is a pure fraud. The popular vote means absolutely nothing. If you actually go and look, we have an indirect election. The electors, the bloodline, in other words, elects the president. So we're actually going out there, putting our vote in, spending billions of dollars in campaigning and all this stuff, all for absolutely nothing, because in the end, all we're doing is legitimizing a system to elect itself, or elect one of its actual landholders as the president. So the whole thing is a fraud. And what you start to see, Deanna, or what I've started to see, is that there isn't a bunch of conspiracies happening. There's no new conspiracies. There is only one conspiracy. And the conspiracy was, which is nothing more than a plan between two or more people to basically defraud, injure, harm. You know, injure means just to bring someone into law, basically your law, right? So there's only, that was called confederation. Confederation and conspiracy are the same exact word. Mm-hmm. So the conspiracy was a plan between basically a people, which we call we the people, which are the private members of each state. They got together and they created a commercial government called the United States to control all of us, which are public entities.
Let me interject something here. Somebody in the chat room said, I'm not sure a religious or spiritual solution will solve the current environment. Now, you're not suggesting a religious or spiritual solution, correct?
Well, so solution is kind of is one of those words, you know, that people throw around. They have no idea what it means. A solution is an end of contract. So if I'm not in a contract, if I'm not in a civil type of contract, then the only thing I have left is to actually be a religious man. Again, that doesn't mean I'm a Catholic or I'm a Methodist or any of the Roman denominations. It just means that I'm actually acting on my moral compass, my moral law.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, yeah, actually it is a religious or, if you will, spiritual solution because, well, let me put it to you this way. The whole point of citizenship, the whole point of civil law, and the whole point of the United States is to take people away from their ability to act religiously or to act according to the moral law. When you're occupying a person of the United States, a false, a fiction, a straw man, a vessel, a ship, citizenship, and you're sailing that around, and 100% of the time you're acting in a commercial capacity as an agent for the United States, which is the principal and owner of that vessel, then you have no right to act morally or according to your own moral thought. That is what true religion is. Religion is not an organization, a corporation, a church. A church is not a building. Okay. A religious house is not a building. Those are called dwelling houses. When you say a church, you mean a people. When we say Israel, for instance, in the Bible, not the same Israel as today, it meant a people who were living a spiritual or religious life according to a moral law. So when we contemplate the notion of living a religious life, it does not mean as a Catholic, as a Jew, as a Muslim. It means to actually act according to the moral law, whatever that law is. But as a citizen of the United States, literally the court says you have no right to act according to any moral law. We're an amoral, non-religious entity, a corporate entity, totally based in mammon or money. So you have no right. In fact, the definition, I mean, you can look at it yourself in Black's Law, I think it's I want to say Black's Law 4th. Yeah, Black's Law 4th. Freedom of religion. This is how it's defined, Deanna. And if you understand this, then you understand what freedom actually is. Freedom of religion embraces the concept of the freedom to believe and the freedom to act. The first of which, belief, is absolute. They can't, well, as of yet, they can't control your thoughts. Right?
Well,
they can't punish you.
In a way they can. Because we are so brainwashed. I mean, they can't control everybody's thoughts, but they certainly can control a majority of the people who simply have lost the ability or have abandoned or relinquished the ability to critically think. And so they just accept whatever they're told. And so they really can control people by... Okay, go ahead.
Well, what I mean to say is that they cannot, again, as of yet, because they can't extract from your head, they can't punish you for your belief.
Okay.
Okay, so the freedom to believe is absolute. I mean, you can believe whatever the heck you want. But while you're a citizen of the United States, Says the second of which is action. So your actions based on your moral law or your religion, your freedom of religion, remain subject to the regulation for protection of society. That's straight out of the courts, okay? Your actions cannot reflect your religion or your moral compass, your spirituality, your the God's law, the natural law, whatever heck the people want to call it, all of it coming from the Bible. You cannot act on that while you're a citizen. And so you're absolutely correct, Deanna. The question is, how do they control us? And that goes back to the person, the artificial structure, the little character we play in government, in the Matrix. You see, because everything is attached, everything that's fictional, all the laws of man, all the commercial things, all the titles and the birth certificate is all attached to that fictional creation, that legal entity that's created from the birth certificate. That's what the law is attached to. And it's kind of like a rental car. You know, if I go get a rental car, I'm renting a vehicle. I'm renting a vessel from a company, and therefore I have to follow its law. How does it make me follow its rules and regulations revolving around that vessel, that artificial conveyance that I'm going to be using for the next few days? I have to follow the law of that company, which is, of course, under United States law plus their own rules. I agree to that because I'm using its vessel. The way they control us is they convince us that that identity, that identity that we portray in public instead of acting privately, but the Clint Richardson, therefore, with social security number this and phone number this and address this and this property and this not, you know, all, this record, this medical history, all the different marks and signs that make up that definitive persona, that artificial person, the law is attached to the person, not to the man. And unfortunately, to be acting as a citizenship of the United States, we are bound in what's called surety. In other words, insurance, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we have that surname. So we actually have to follow the law or we get punished because we're the agent. The United States is our principal. It's letting us rent its car, its ship. We're the agent, and everybody we deal with then is through our principal, which is the United States. We're acting in a purely commercial capacity. This is the thing that we have to stop. We have to focus on it. We have to realize again, this is why we don't have the freedom of religion, the freedom to live as we choose, because we're voluntarily participating in a national identity. And because of that, we have to follow that national law, which just happens to be the law of nations, international law.
Indeed. Right. And all those numbers you mentioned, all of the material things that we're attached to and the organizations that we are attached to, gives us what you talked about in the beginning, our identity. And that is how they, quote unquote, see us. And we actually have the freedoms that they have allowed us to have, correct?
Right, because, you know, my whole book that I've been working on is about the legal language, which, of course, is the king's language or the priest's class language.
Oh, yes.
Right? And so
yes.
If you don't understand, I mean, if you say freedom and you don't know what the word means, well, then you're going to believe whatever you've been told
right. In
entertainment and romance and all of that stuff.
Right. Clint, we do have a quick 3-minute break. We will be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
All righty. We are back, and this is, I hear an echo. Skype has been acting really funny the last couple of days. I'm not sure why. But anyway, our guest tonight is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com. Again, that is realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. And that was the best video. And you've done other videos. You did Lethal Injection, The Story of Vaccination in 2011. You did Kaffir School Districts and the Lottery. And then you did Common Core, Agenda 21, and Global Privatization. I mean, you're a writer, a filmmaker. I mean, you just have so many talents.
Good times, huh?
Yeah.
I truly wish I had more of a gumption to do all of those things, but I'm really trying to just focus on one thing and then get, I'd like to make another movie. In fact, I had a regular guest, Patrick Jordan, on, and I'd love to make a film with him because, you know, this guy's got the whole biological weapon agenda figured out, you know, between vaccination and all these other different things. It would be a really fascinating trip to do a movie. And then I was working on another movie about all of this horse hockey that we see about the Bundy Ranch and all the issues.
What is all that? I mean, it is. Well, they've always been after the independent ranchers. I mean, that's a given. And that has been going on for some time, and I've written about it in the past, and certainly they want to get rid of all independent business people, and which of course includes the ranchers.
Yeah, I mean, so the problem again, it always boils back to corporations or incorporations. So I mean, the farm I was working on here. Locally here in Utah, it's an organic farm, and you know, the guy, he had the most wonderful thing going for him. He had the original federal right of way across land and everything. So
right.
I mean, this guy had one of the few remaining actual parcels of land that was held in an actual grant that couldn't be taken away, that was succeedable to his family. But to make it easier to deal with all of the things, basically what he wanted to do is he wanted to sell milk. And so to sell milk, he had to Costco was going to be his customer. He had to comply with all of the things that are required to enter into a commercial state of business. Whereas before, the farm was his and his alone. He could do private transactions. But as soon as he got into something that was regulated as a commercial transaction, then he had to incorporate the farm. And it was over. He literally turned the farm from a spiritual, natural piece of land into a paper title that was totally now controllable by government, and they've been picking off his land ever since. Well, same thing with these guys out here. They're, all of our problems, Deanna, they stem from one thing. And that's that we're living in a fallacy. We're living in this dreamland where we think that we actually own our land or that we're the landholders, that we have a right to hold land, which we don't. And so these guys are out there. They're acting in a public capacity. They're acting with permission. They're acting in a status of government. They have an incorporated farm. They're using BLM land, which is the territory of the United States. And they're saying, well... And they're expecting the government to treat them as if they're private individuals or private landholders, which they are not. This is the big fallacy. And to truly explain how that works, I've been trying to think of a way to make it easier for people to really understand the Constitution and how truly we are not a party as public citizens of the United States, that we have nothing to do with the Constitution. The Constitution only applies to a private individual, private man, meaning male or female, who reserves all their rights. Well, tell me, which rights have you reserved? By being a United States citizen, you have no rights. You have your freedom of religion. You have no freedom of religion, except that you can believe, but you can't act on your religious thoughts like a private individual can, or a, in, someone in a private law. And so I thought about it for a while, and I realized, oh, okay, it's real simple. Okay. So a bunch of guys, a bunch of people, we get together, and I'm going to use, instead of the word, and they use the word landholder, right? Who can vote, for instance?
Mm-hmm.
When the Constitution was created, who can vote? Well, only landholders. And this is a very clever way of actually saying, you could really make that into anything, because truly what does that mean behind the scenes? Well, it means white persons, which are specifically defined in law. It can be a Jew, it can be a lot of things, but what it can't be is a black person, or a Chinese person, or a Muslim man, or any other type of non-white person, right? And mm-hmm. the white person covers a whole, you know, spectrum of blood. A big bloodline, in other words, right? So let's take it a different. So, in other words, anybody who's not a landholder cannot vote. Well, that was most of the people in the United States, because most of the people in the United States were on plantations or were indentured servants working,
mm-hmm.
right? Pretty much slaves.
That's right.
Colony and plantation, colony and farm. They're the same words. This was strictly a commercial venture. Right? So mm-hmm. only landholders, of course. If you're gonna create a private club or a private nation, a private thing, anything, you're going to reserve all of that stuff for your own family. Whatever happens in your, all these commercial adventures, you're gonna wanna leave it to your children, to your bloodline. Right?
Sure.
I mean, that's only logical. Every nation is built that way. I mean, there's no denying that, and that's what we the people means. We, a certain group of people, as a body politic who have a certain relation in blood. That's the conspiracy. Those were the people who got together through their representatives, the quote-unquote founding fathers, the attorneys, and they, attorney and agent are the same word, and they created this country. So now let's take it a different way. Let's say, okay, I'm going to have a party tonight. I'm at a college, but I'm going to say, I'm only gonna invite cheerleaders and football players to my party. Well, now I know who a cheerleader and a football player are because they're bearing my arms. I give them a uniform that has my heraldry, my sign, my corporation. They've all got a number, right? They're numbered as individuals of my particular people, right? So those, mm-hmm. that's who can come to my party, but everybody else, they have no right to be at my party, right? So I've just created a word, cheerleader. But guess what? I decide who gets to be a cheerleader, because it's my team, it's my corporation. I get to decide who gets to be a football player. It's my tryouts, it's my NFL team or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's my
right.
private association, purely private. Everybody else is be damned. Everybody else is just there to support me and my franchises, my corporations, my things that I create, including my damn nation.
Right.
So this is, we are not cheerleaders. And so what I'm really saying, I've just drawn up a constitution and it says we're having a party tonight and there's going to be a keg and there's going to be this and there's going to be this. And this is that's my constitution. And I say, what I've really said is that cheerleaders and football players are the only ones that are parties to my constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is not a party to my constitution.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's where we're at. We are not the landholders, we're not the cheerleaders, and we're not the football players. We're the custodians.
We clean the benches and stuff after.
Yeah, well, we're the human capital being managed. We are the capitalist system.
Mm.
We are counted by the head. We are censused. We are basically there to support their commercial system that they created, that they give us a temporary residence in wherever state that we choose to reside. But we always have to remember that we are United States citizens, not a citizen of California, not a citizen right. of Utah. We all live, because we're talking about our artificial person here, we all live in Washington, D.C. And it's important to know that district and Caesar are pretty much the same term. Seizure and Caesar are very similar. So a district has four meanings to it. A seizure, a distraint, a distress, and there's one other that I can't think of. Okay, so we're all under distress. We're all under distraint, meaning we're being restrained under the public law because we're acting as public persons. And we were seized at birth, and to be seized is a little different than the notion of the normal notion of being seized. Seize is, like livery of scene, all these different types of terms. It's actually a lateral sort of handing over or delivery of something or a purchase of something. And so it's not a necessarily a violent seizure as much as it is just that's what district means. And so we're all existing in this district that doesn't exist in nature, so we're not part of the states. We're only there as temporary residents. And so this is the problem: we're not the landholders. These people out there who are pretending to be the landholders because they have a big farm and they're using other people's land because that's an easement that's given. Well, you don't take an easement, you don't take a right, and then deny all of the obligations that come with the right. Right? I mean, I don't accept the good parts of a contract and then say, well, I'm not gonna fulfill my part of the contract. No, sure. No, you can't do that.
Right.
So, that's basically the problem. It boils down to one simple thing. We're acting publicly while pretending to be private. And if you try to do that, you try to not fulfill the law that is that your person, that your whole status is bound by, you're going to get in trouble.
Hmm.
It's a bizarre system, but it's the system we're in.
Exactly. And we were born into it, and but there are ways of working within it. We're extracting ourselves from it, right?
Well, everybody's working in it. You know, some people do better at it than others. It is a system that allows license to do things that you could not do under the spiritual, natural, or religious law. It's a violation of all of nature, all of God's law. This is what licensure is. Another word for license is actually anarchy. A lawlessness. If I create a rule that says with my permission you can go out and kill, and you can go kill a bunch of turban wearing brown skinned people, I've just created an organized anarchy, an organized lawless system that says you can kill without punishment, basically.
Wow.
So it's basically bypassing God's law, which is that most people consider the natural law as the do no harm kind of thing.
Sure.
And it's saying, well, you know, in this case, because you have a little piece of credential and we issued you a gun and a uniform and you're bearing our arms, which is the United States flag and seal, well then you can go and you can kill. As long as you're doing it in an official capacity. And see, that goes back, Deanna, to the notion, well, I'm not killing. I'm a soldier. It's the soldier, the persona, the fiction that's killing, not me. I'm just following the orders that were given to my person, to my flattering title. And therefore, hey, well, see, that's the problem. And this is why the Bible is so important, because over and over and over, That spiritual law says respect no persons, which means respect no corporations, which means respect no governments or churches that are corporations, no religions, no Vatican, no 501c3 corporation, none of that stuff. Never respect a man's flattering title. Oh, you're a doctor? Oh, you have insurance that says you can commit malpractice and kill me? Oh, okay, great. Wonderful. Really? You're not responsible for it? You're actually insured? You have license to kill because it's called malpractice and you have insurance for that?
Right. And of course, the standard of care. They create the standard of care, which allows for this.
Sure. Sure.
Encourages it.
Like I said, it's not our system. It's their system. If we want to get that care, we have to agree to their standards of care. We have to go through with all of this stuff in order for our person to be accepted and to be insured, or for us to be insured through that person as the agent of that principle, and to get all that Obama federal care, well, we have to then go through and jump through all these hoops. See, this is how we are utterly controlled. Whether we realize it's happening or not, most people don't realize. Most people believe truly that they are their driver's license, that they are their social security number, that that is actually a part of them. Most people, if I say something negative about their church or their government, they believe so fervently that they are a part of that fiction that they are actually offended, as if I actually am insulting them because they're a member of that thing I'm actually exposing as a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is the problem. We're living a lie. A big, massive, confirmed, ratified lie. And this is what has to change. We have to start being conscious of the fact that we're breaking every moral, religious, and spiritual natural law in existence every single day of our lives just by being a citizen of a nation. We are actually respecting names, flattering titles, persons. We're taking a mark. We're taking a number. We're using our signature. We're doing everything that is totally against nature in order so that we may harm one another.
Yikes. And it's true. Of course it's true. Yes. All righty. We're going to take a real quick 3-minute break. We will be right back. Our guest tonight is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. This is such an interesting discussion. I mean, it's you really are, well, just re-emphasizing things that we've heard before, but we do need to hear them again because we do need to understand. I mean, just like when you said, we're given a certificate, a rifle, one of their arms. We get recruited, or we join because there's no job opportunities. People join the military. They're given a uniform and a gun and given license to kill people in other countries. Amazing.
Well, and people in this country.
Sure, sure.
And make no mistake, one of the big fallacies that we have, again, remembering we're not party to the Constitution, right? The reason that the Constitution is so important to these people who created it is that it's a negative document, meaning that it's basically a list of things the government can't mess with. And so when we say you have the right to bear arms, it's not talking about guns. It's talking about your family crest, your heraldry, your genealogy. It's the right, because the only way to show that you're private and not acting in a public capacity is to show that your blood hasn't been tainted or put into a tainter, right? So a public citizen has no blood. This is why a public citizen has no right to land. Land and blood are very much intermixed when it comes to the history of law dating back to as far as time has recorded. So when you're talking about bearing arms, I'm actually telling you that that little United States flag that is on the soldier's arm is the arms of the United States. That's their father.
Sure. Right?
When we fly the United States flag, which I can never figure out people doing on all these holidays.
I never do that.
We are flying the arms of the United States. We're flying its flag. We're saying we love our captors. We love this thing that enslaves us through its corporate personhood. We actually are supporting and are being patriotic about, it's like Stockholm syndrome, basically.
Sure.
We're loving our captor. It's a very strange,
bizarre
system. Yeah. So it's very important to know that these people, these private landholders that we call the states, state means people, they are part of the posterity, as is written in the preamble of the Constitution. They are part of the bloodline. They are bearing the fact that, or their genealogy, they're bearing the fact that they are the blood relations of those founding fathers and those who they represented, the white persons, in other words. And of course, you got to keep in mind, Barack Obama is a white person. Has nothing to do, as you'll find in law, if you actually do the research, white person has nothing to do with skin color. It has to do with a specific term of art. And Barack Obama is actually part of the Dunham clan.
Wow.
And that's a very powerful family.
Wow.
White.
All righty, we're at the top of the hour. We'll be back in 3 minutes.
Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
RealityBlogger.wordpress.com and TheCorporationNation.com. And you were talking about the arms. And in the Bible, the tribes of Israel actually carried a banner to signify their tribe. And if you look at the Bible and then piece all this together about what we are seeing now, it makes perfect sense. Now, you said you were talking about Barack Obama and that he's not, he's white, because of his relatives, his ancestry, or the family that he belongs to.
Sure. His Jewish mother, her last name is Dunham. I can't remember her first name at the moment. But there's pictures of her in pornographic.
Stanley,
yeah. Who's a relation of the Dunham? So, you trace it back to the, I think it's Connecticut, if I'm not mistaken, is where the Dunhams have all their property. And they're, of course, one of the posterity of the landholders, basically. Now we go to Bouvier's Law Dictionary, 1856, which you can find online. Oh, look, I like this dictionary, for when it comes to constitutional, words, because it was specifically commissioned by Congress to, be the official dictionary, to explain the words in the Constitution. So, and it was actually inducted into the, as part of the law. Inducted is not the right word, I'm sorry. White persons. You know, here it is. The acts of Congress which authorized the naturalization of aliens confined the description of such aliens to free white persons. This, of course, excludes the African race when pure. So a pure black, quote-unquote, African person would not be considered a white person. But then it goes on. It says, but it is not easy to say what shade of color or mixture of blood will make a white person. So we have the, we have a very, very confused aspect of what a white person is. We, I know you know, Deanna, that when we look at some of the census reports, especially down in, in like Louisiana, New Orleans area, you had a very, very heavy group of black slave holders, not slaves, but slave holders, slave traders, right? And so they were white persons. And this is very hard for people to understand. Your skin color does not make you a quote unquote white person. Because remember, they created that word. It's a term of art. It's not an etymological discussion. It's not a general term. It's a specific legal term that they created, kind of like landholder or cheerleader, right? They have white persons. What's a white person? Well, as you can see, you can be black like Obama and still be white. See, so the thought that Obama is the first white, or excuse me, black president is so fallacious, I don't even know what to say. He's a white person. According to law, he's a white person. Right? Mm-hmm. So we don't have and never will have a pure black president because only the landholders, only the bloodline gets to be president and only white persons, therefore, you'll never have an actual pure black president. It's not going to happen.
Like a Ben Carson or somebody like that?
Well, I'm assuming Ben Carson is, again, a white person.
Right. Okay.
So, again...
Well, I think that if you really look at skin color and recognize that most of the black people in this country are not really all black because of the collaboration of the whites and the blacks.
Sure, but you're also missing a very important point. Most of the white people, when we're talking about skin color, most of the white people in this country are not actually white persons. Because remember, this is only themselves, we the people, ourselves and our posterity, our bloodline, our children who hold the lands in this country, not anyone else. So most white people in this country do not qualify as, say, the line of Charlemagne or the line of King John, sure, for which all presidents are related.
Sure. Right?
So, you know, this is the, again, when you step back, you take, you know, authors and researchers such as Fritz Springmeier and what's his name, David Icke, and all their research and all this stuff into the bloodlines of the Illuminati and all this, you're totally missing the point. When I say, hey, this country is a conspiracy, a confederation of white persons who got together to form a commercial entity to benefit themselves and their posterity, that is the conspiracy. In their purview, nothing they do will ever be a conspiracy. If they got together and killed one of their own, killed JFK, for instance, or Martin Luther King, who was probably also a white person, I'm telling you, that's not a conspiracy. The only conspiracy is anything you do against government, against their system that might affect their bottom line, their commercial enterprise, or their ability to rule over us. This is the thing that once you get to the top of the heap of all this information and disinformation and patriotism and all the crap, you put it aside and you say, what does the law actually say? What is their system actually say? Forget what I think. Forget what I want to think. Forget the fact that I have certain beliefs because they don't count. This is their system, not mine. I have to put myself in their shoes and think the way they think to understand their system.
Right. And of course the whole court system, the judges know this, lawyers know this, because they are a part of that system, and are trained, to play ball with the people who run things.
Well, sure. And it's, you know, and the other thing, just to totally make sure I'm making sense here, and so there's no questions. When we say, when you mentioned the notion of skin color, right? Well, do you think that the legal system, being basically a cipher of words on paper that create a system, a corporation, do you think that a fiction has any color? Do you think that there is red or blue or white or black in the fiction? Do you think that the fiction that is the country, the nation, has any ability to identify who is black, white,
no,
Asian?
No, not really.
Right. So do you still think that the notion of being a white person has anything to do with skin color?
Obviously not.
Right. And I really want people to understand this point, that it is not the skin color, it's your blood. Obama is a direct descendant of the kings of England, not a cousin, a direct descendant of the kings of England. Okay, his first cousin was Anne Boleyn, etc., etc. We're not talking about the color of his skin, we're talking about the character, if you will, of his blood. This is why no one else, he's not president for any reason.
Right. He didn't warrant being president. And of course he did meet, with a group of people in New York who, gave him his marching orders and then funded his first political campaign, for Illinois. So I mean, and I think that he was in preparation long before that.
Yeah, well, so, and again, no one is being prepped to be president. Every time you look, you know, and I did the research before I understood all this, and I was looking into the notion that it's a conspiracy, that somehow all these people who are CEOs of corporations, all these people who are high-profile actors, and all these people who are the presidents and senators and congressmen who are high-profile, they all just happen to be related, and that seemed like a very important detail. It couldn't be just coincidence, and so it was quote-unquote a conspiracy theory, right? I mean, something is going on here. When you put it into perspective, though, you just, again, it's themselves and their posterity. It is their system being passed on generation to generation to their children, their successors, their bloodline. That's all it is. Now, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, a couple articles ago, I did a thing on them. John of Gaunt, first Duke of Lancaster, married Catherine Swinford, Duchess of Lancaster, and John and Catherine are Donald and Hillary's shared 18th great-grandparent. Okay, so you're going to see Hillary Clinton and what's his name, who are very, very close cousins, run against Donald Trump. You're going, just like you saw George Bush and John Kerry, who were very close eighth cousins, just like you saw Abraham Lincoln and another guy that I can't remember his name, were cousins, just like you saw the Founding Fathers, all this is their system. I really want people to grasp this. And the other thing, you know, this guy, he did the research. This was Al Jacobs. He said the headline of the article is Obama has 44 cousins in the Senate.
Yikes.
And the last thing he says is that, let's see, all of Barack Obama's cousins, the last thing he says is that eventually they're going to link all 100 senators as Barack Obama's cousins.
Wow. Right? So now, who does the genealogical research that determines this relationship?
Well, obviously, genealogy to someone like the Queen of England, or to George Washington, or to President Obama, or anybody, it's obviously more important. It's more valuable to these people than gold.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because it's what elevates them to this status that they pretend, this fabled genealogy, as the Bible calls it, which you're not supposed to respect, right? So you're talking about the profession of genealogist is one that is a very respected and very internal, if you will. You'll find that all genealogists are right in the thick of it all. In other words, there's no reason for someone like me who doesn't know my hand from my ass out here in the public wasteland of citizenship to be a genealogist, unless I'm for some reason drawn to that. A genealogist is always doing so because it's a respected profession for the bloodline. Right? So, I mean, there'd be no reason for most people to be interested in genealogy. So you find that all the genealogy websites that do a really fantastic job are generally, the guys who've done the research, in other words, are generally doing so because they're part of the family. So it's, I don't know what to say. I mean, it's you know, you've got your vice presidents and your presidents always cousins, because no one else will be the president of their creation. It's not going to happen to one of us. It's just not going to happen. Now, this is not to say, this is what's interesting about it, is this is not to say that you can't go and you can't prove yourself to be one of the bloodline and get rid of your public citizenship and even become a landholder. Right? A lot of people qualify for that. You just got to prove your genealogy. But the question becomes this for me. Is that a moral choice? Is that something that you want to, do you want to become the slave master instead of the slave? Do you want to actually become part of the problem and actually have people under you instead of being the one under them? So there, to me, that's not a solution. It might be a temporary solution while you're trying to figure things out. But to me, becoming one of them is not the answer, even though a lot of people listening right now probably qualify and can be declared a private citizen of whatever state, and they can get rid of the United States citizenship, which I don't say is a bad thing. I say it's a bad thing if you stop there and you start benefiting from the human capital management system. There's mm-hmm. there's a further step to go, in my opinion, and that is, you know, what Frederick Douglass, who was a black man,
right?
What did he say? All men, no man is free until all men are free. Right. So
how
simply,
true. Yes.
Right, simply, yeah. In other words, if all men are private, if all men are acting in a private capacity, responsible for their own actions under the private law, then there's no slaves. There's no public persons, which is just another word for basically subject or slave.
Right. Right. Wow.
I know, like you said, it sounds kind of nuts, but when you see it from the top and, you know, you see these definitions like white person, the whole thing starts making sense. What really tripped me out, Deanna, is as I'm doing all this research and trying to figure this whole thing out, the notion of blood is the absolute most important thing, in law. If you either have blood or you don't, you cannot be an heir to land. I cannot pass anything to my child unless his blood and my blood is recognized by law. The reason that we have to write a will is because we have no right to do anything. We have no blood consideration in this country. It's the process of birth, that birth certificate, and then, acting according to that personhood, we call that confirmation of the fraud. We are actually screwing ourselves. We're delivering our baby to the state. It becomes a ward of the state. It has therefore no father. The state doesn't have any blood.
Right.
Right? So we're all illegitimate. We get married, and we're every marriage in the public realm is illegitimate. Your marriage, anybody's marriage that's getting married in a capacity that's a legal marriage is considered by the law, by the state, by their system as an illegitimate marriage. And the only thing that can come from an illegitimate marriage is illegitimate children. Right. And that's what all of us are according to their system. But we're just dying. We're just begging on our knees to be part of their system, to get their benefits, to get their, you know, be poisoned by them. We love it. We want more. We just don't realize what the hell's happened to us.
Sure. Well, I think that you can see it. For instance, I was listening to a program the other day, and children who are in school can be locked down for any number of hours, and school officials will not release those children to their parents. In other words, the state now has such control over the parent, over the children, that they can do that.
Well, the state never didn't have that power of control. Whether it uses its power is a whole, you know, a can of worms, right?
They're beginning to use it more and more.
For
instance, in the vaccine situation, and of course Obamacare or the Protective Patient Act, you know, they always make it seem like they're doing us a big favor. But under Obamacare, I mean, the state has the capacity to say, you will take this medical procedure, you will accept this vaccine, or you will not be allowed to do this, and this. So, I mean, it's becoming even more apparent just how much control and that they have over everybody.
Sure. And again, remember, you were abandoned just as your mother and father were abandoned. If you're in the public realm, if you're a citizen of the United States, then you were abandoned at birth. Your father is the United States, or more accurately, your father is the people. Okay, you don't have your parents aren't claiming you as their property. You're not claiming yourself as your own property, and so you're a patient, right? Well, and you have what's called freedom. Now, I know we've talked about this before, but I always find it fascinating that people just don't get this. Okay? Remember, we're not talking about the etymology of the word. We're not talking about the definition that you'd find in any college dictionary. We're talking about the legal term free and freedom. To be free is to be in franchise. A McDonald's is free of its parent corporation. It's in franchise.
Yes.
Does that mean it can act according to its own law? Absolutely not. It must follow the law of its principal. It's an agent of the principal, McDonald's Corporation. Freedom, the fact that we have freedom bestowed upon us, means that our franchise, our state of being free, is dominated or has dominion in the United States. Right? These words are very specific. They have a certain meaning that most people don't comprehend. Now, what does it mean to be a patient? This is one of my favorite words because it describes the people of all nations. It describes, and please understand, Deanna, that another word for people, when you're talking about the common or the multitude, the unregenerate, the unspiritual, the general population, all these different terms, they mean the same thing. You know what it means? It means goyim. To be the people of the United States in the public capacity is to be the goy, the slaves of the people. This is, I can't stress that enough. Don't, you know, this is not my opinion. This is very well laid out, not only in scriptures, not only in dictionaries, not only in the encyclopedias. Everywhere you look, when you start knowing what to look for and understanding this, go to Webster's, go to, I mean, Goyim means people. And when you're talking about a people in a general sense, it means the word's not capitalized like it is in the Constitution. So it's not a body politic. It's not a specific group of people. It's the general population. We are the Goyim, the people of the nation, or the people, nation means to be born in. So we are the people born of the nation, or of the, you know, it's just this repeating ridiculousness that we keep doing generation after generation. That's what's got to change. So to be a patient in Webster's 1828, having the quality of this, again, listen to this definition, Deanna, and tell me this is not the typical citizen of any nation. To be a patient, from the Latin patiens, having the quality of enduring evils without murmuring or fretfulness, sustaining afflictions of body or mind with fortitude, calmness or Christian submission to the divine will as a patient person or a person of patient temper.
Oh my gosh.
It is followed by or before the evil endured as a patient of labor or pain, not easily provoked, one calm under the sufferance of injuries or offenses, not revengeful, persevering, not hasty, not eager or impetuous, waiting or expecting with calmness or without discontent. In the noun form, it's a person or thing that received impressions from external agents. So think about what Obamacare makes us. It makes us a patient. It makes us a right. person or thing that is receiving an impression from
exactly,
an
yes.
agent. Right?
Yes.
We're not considered as a spiritual, living, breathing man. We're a corporation. We're an entity, an identity that needs to be taken care of. He or that which is passively affected, always involves the agent, and the patient. It is a person diseased or suffering bodily in disposition. Now remember, the word disease is two words. Dis is actually one of the Dante's words for the devil. Or names for the devil, D-I-S. And it always means a separation from whatever the word it's attached to. So we say a person diseased. So someone that's made not to be at ease.
Right.
Is a patient. It goes on. It's just funny to read that and then consider, it's exactly what we do and how we act. Under this basically martial law system we're under.
Right. Now, I asked you during the break about your book, and somebody in the chat room wants to know when it will be available.
I plan on putting it out in a PDF form for everybody for free.
No. You cannot do that for free.
Yeah, I know.
You need to put a price on it so people will.
Well, I mean, I'd certainly appreciate donations or gifts, as I call them. I do this for a reason, and that is because I'm trying to practice what I'm preaching. When you read the introduction to the book, why it is more difficult, why you just can't go to Amazon, why I'm keeping it a private work instead of a published.
Oh, book. I see. Got
so,
it.
Yeah, no one can claim ownership of it but me. No state, no government, no nation, no nothing.
Okay.
Therefore, it can't be taken or stolen from me. I'm not doing it as Clint Richardson, the public persona of the United States. I'm doing it in my Christian name only, which is just Clint. Right?
Oh, so how wonderful.
It's a private work by myself and no other. It's not being edited by the Jewish editing houses or anything like that. You know, once you understand that to publish something means to make it public, well,
okay.
who owns the public?
Sure.
Not me. Not you. Public is not my domain. I don't own it. So that's why, you know, that's why I'm giving it away for free. And then if people want a hard copy, then I'll certainly, somehow publish those. Probably have to, I'll figure it out here real soon. I plan on having it done within the next month or two.
Okay.
And that's, I've been saying that for a while, but it's actually, I'm actually at the point now where it's finally organized to the point where I feel confident enough. And you know as well as me how difficult it is to actually call something a final, you know.
It's never final. It's, you could work on it the rest of your life. And if you're a perfectionist, then that's, you know, it would be very difficult to say, hey, I'm done with it and I'm totally happy with it, because the minute it's out in print, you can find all kinds of errors or things that you could have said or didn't say it quite right. So sure, it's a difficult process.
And when I say practice what I preach, I understand totally and 100% with all sincerity that money is the root of all evil. That when we say the word mammon is more than just money or interest or all that. Mammon is the notion of putting a monetary value on everything that you see.
Oh, yes.
I don't look at things just as their wondrous being. I look at things, hey, that's probably worth $10.
Sure.
That's
amazing. Amazing. All righty, we're going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
All righty, we are back. Our guest tonight is the one and only Clint. Should we say your last name? Clint. The author who is staying true to his views. I don't even want to say views, to your evidence that you've discovered. And I didn't understand that. When I was talking to you about the book during the break, I fell into that trap of thinking, well, gosh, the man is worthy of his labor.
this is where people go wrong. When you actually look up, the question earlier was, did I mean to say spiritual or religious, right? When you look up what that means, and this is very important because, you know, even in the Constitution, it says that government can't pass a law or do anything respecting religion. Well, so let's focus on that for a minute. If government can't respect anything religious, that means it can't touch anything religious. It can't even get around anything religious. It's like it's allergic to. It's like an immunity. This is why monasteries and stuff were so untouched in wars and stuff, because government cannot regulate religion. But all these religions we have, they're all fake. They're all false. They're all corporations of government, just like we are persons of government. Churches are also persons or corporations, artificial persons of government. Therefore, they can be regulated. This is why there is no sanctuary. There is no place that you can go to find sanctuary from the sanctions of law, from the punishment of law. There's no place to go. This is what I'm trying to get people to understand, is that unless you act religiously, then there's no place for you to walk to. You can't walk away from the United States jurisdiction or these people's so-called easements of land and all that. There's nowhere to walk to unless you create a space that is purely religious. Now, this is where people go, oh, religion. You have to know what that means according to the law of nations, according to the most ancient laws. And it's very simple. To qualify as something religious, whether it's a man or a religious society, and truly be considered as something untouchable to the law, you actually have to do and act in pure and utter charity. That means that when you give something to somebody, when you give a gift, when you do something, when you participate, when you do work, when you build a barn for someone else, anything that you do, you never do it with any thought or expectation of reciprocation. You never ever do anything except out of the goodness of your heart in pure charity. That is actually the true definition of religious. In the spiritual sense, in the biblical Christ's teaching sense, that is what true spirituality, that is what true religious action is. That is illegal in the United States. Okay, morals are illegal in the freaking United States. You cannot act morally and according to pure charity. You have to register your charity. You have to get permission to be charitable. And when you give charity, you have to do it tax deductible. I mean, right? That's how ridiculous. Yeah. That's how you know you're not living in a pure society of free will and religion, because it's legal. It's secular. Everything must be tracked and monitored, right? The trick is to get to that point, and that means ultimately to live without money. And ultimately what that means is to live without a valuation. In other words, my work is worth this much, your cow is worth this much, let's trade. No, you come over for dinner, I feed you without ever expecting anything in return. That's the difference. So when I say that my work is free, I mean it's purely a charitable act on behalf of myself to help people to obtain knowledge, which the Bible says is much more, ultimately, infinitely, infinitely more valuable than gold or wealth or riches. We know that a rich man cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. Well, I'm here to tell you that heaven is on earth. It's all around us. It's called nature. And until we get back to it, until we respect it again without putting a value on it, then we're never going to obtain heaven on earth. We're never going to be anything that we claim that we are. We're never going to be Christ-like. We're going to be a legal Christian or a legal atheist or a legal this or a legal that, but we're never actually going to be anything real. And that's what I'm trying to, get at here. True love and true charity are things that most people can't even imagine being a part of, because we have money, we have expectations, we have, whatever we do, we expect something back. And I think that's above all else, that's what the message is of all these spiritual movements and books and ancient texts, and, you know, scripture just means ancient knowledge. That is the one thing I think that really eludes people, is the notion of true charity. Because again, government, it's like garlic, you know, the government, if you're acting in pure charity, man, government's like, oh, foiled again. I can't touch him because he's not trying to use our money and have consumer protections and all the securities and insurances and all the things. No, he's actually doing it without expecting anything in return. Damn, we can't do anything about that.
Right.
That's
Now, aren't all the churches 501(c)?
Absolutely. And see, this is one of the things that I came across. And in fact, let me read it straight. Let me see. I've got all this stuff in my document. And I always, it's so much easier just to type in a word and have it come right up, you know? So what I found is that, The notion of being Christian is, again, it's sort of a fallacy in this country. So there's two kinds of Christian. In the Bible, the word Christian is used three times. And all three times, it's basically an insult. All right? So it's kind of interesting when you actually look at it that way. A Christian is what Caesar proclaimed all of his people to be, corporate Christians. In other words, pagans with the flattering title of Christian. They didn't have to do anything. They didn't have to act the part. They didn't have to even acquire any knowledge of the spiritual or natural law. They just had to be born in the nation of Caesar. And they were Christians. Well, the reason they call this a Christian nation is because we're also, you know, all roads lead back to Rome. All religions stem from the Catholic religion. And I found out that Catholic just means universal. The word Christian comes from Catholicism. It doesn't come from, it's not like Jesus Christ was, walking around, that's a whole statement in itself. But it's not like the Christ character in the Bible was walking around saying, become a Christian. That's a false state of being. It's like being an employee or a citizen or a member of a church. That makes you a Christian somehow. And so what I found is that there's two forms of Christianity. One is true piety, true charity, true faith, which means truth, ultimate truth, reality, basically, nature. All right. And then there's the other kind of Christianity, which is what we are all pretending to be. That is to be born in a nation. If I'm born in a Christian nation, I'm automatically a Christian. I can claim to be an atheist. I can claim to be a Buddhist. I can claim to be all kinds of things. But if I'm laying claim to the United States is where I was born, and I'm operating in the person of the United States, well, then I'm Caesar's Christian. It's a legal title. Legal means opposed to God, opposed to the natural law, opposed to nature. Everyone's a Christian. I hate to tell you this, folks. Everyone's a freaking Christian. It means absolutely nothing. It basically means Gentile or pagan. It's the same terminology that Rome uses for its totally corrupt citizenship. You know, they're the ones that sat in the Colosseum and watched the true followers of Christ, those who were uncontrollable because they were acting in pure charity and pure love, they were the ones fed the lions. They were the ones that were persecuted, not the citizenry who went to a church first, let's say, a corporate church, a corporation, an artificial person, when the Bible says never respect any person whatsoever. Never allow yourself or respect any other man to have a flattering title. Well, sorry, folks, but Christian is a flattering title. You're part of one of many quote-unquote Christian nations. I fought heavily against it. I said there's nothing Christ-like about the United States. There's no mention of Christ in the Constitution. There's nothing at all of Christ's teachings in our law, in our nation. Nothing whatsoever. And I was right. Because it's not talking about the real, it's not talking about pure charity and love and absolute spirituality, being a religious man. No, 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 no. It's talking about a corporation with the flattering title of Christian. You see, that's the difference. And it actually says that in Webster's 1828 dictionary. Again, you can look that up online. Just type in Christian and you're going to find that there's two kinds of Christian. One that's born in a nation with the title of Christian. Well, no matter what you do, because your actions have nothing to do with your title. You're not acting in pure charity. You're not acting in love. You're acting in mammon. You can't have two masters. And so a Christian is of mammon. It's not of God. Right? So, and then you have those who are either few or far between or don't exist anymore or never have existed, I'm not sure, which I intend to change, which are those who are actually following and acting according to the scriptural or natural or principles of very foundation of law. And again, it all goes back to the Bible. You can't, this is undeniable, to dismiss the Bible from all law is the most ridiculous concept I could possibly imagine at this point in my journey, because, I mean, that is, it's the authorized King James Version of the Bible. It's the King's law, for God's sake. And it always gives you a choice. That's why I say it's always voluntary. You always have the choice. And this is the big reveal, man. This is the big revelation. The revelation is when people finally wake up and realize that they're acting in a fiction. They're acting in a lie that they believe is the right way, but that is so obviously resulting in everybody's misery, making everybody a patient of that which controls the status of things. So that's where we're at. I'm telling you, you're a Christian, I'm a Christian, hey, anybody's a Christian. Even the Satanists are Christians because they're born in a Christian nation. They're the Goyim, just as they were in Rome.
Right. You know, things have changed. Somebody in the chat room said, well, people have to feed their families, they have to have a roof over their house, over their heads, and so they are compelled to work for the corporations.
Sure.
However, when the country was more agrarian, people had land, they farmed it, they did everything together as a family, they didn't depend, they fed themselves, they were independent. But now that we are no longer agrarian, and we have factory farms and factory ranches, and it just becomes more difficult and we're more enslaved.
Well, think of it this way. Now, if I were to think right now, knowing what we just discussed, if I were to say, hey, I think I'm going to go, you know, try to be a farmer. I'm going to go open a farm. Well, am I doing that because I want to make a profit, or am I doing that because I'm going to be private, circumcised or separated from society, and feed my own family? Now, most people will have that same response. Well, I'm just going to do it for profit. I'm going to, you know, get all the benefits and all the protections and all the security of government. I'm going to incorporate my land. I'm going to do it publicly because I have to sell my product to all these stores and they can't buy it.
Listen. But that's how people think now. But I think 150 years ago, that's not
exactly
how they thought.
And that's what I'm trying to get at, is that people, you are the problem. Your thought patterns are the problem. You're making excuses. Like, imagine. Oh, well, hey, God, yeah, I just died. Hey, good to see you at the pearly gates here. Pay no attention to what I did in person. Pay no attention to what I did legally, because, you know, that wasn't me. That was my artificial person, and I had to do that to survive. Somehow I had to respect money and fictions and flattering titles, and, you know, I had to use the mark of the beast, the Social Security number, to get medical benefits. I had to do all this stuff. Can you imagine what, if in this, you know, imaginary situation, of what God would actually say to someone who actually came up with the excuse that said, I have to do this to feed my family?
Right.
I mean, it's, there is no excuse. I'm telling you, folks, there is no excuse. I am not excusing myself in any way, shape, or form. Right? Cause this is my journey. I'm trying to learn the knowledge to allow me to separate from this. So please keep in mind, I'm not separated from this. I'm trying to get people to the point where they also have the knowledge so that we can actually do it together, because what good is it going to be for me to, you know, that same person has the same feeling that I have. Well, I can't just walk out of here and have nothing to go to. And that's what I'm trying to remedy or fix, is the notion that we'll have maybe a place to go to
sure,
start over, to be separated from the cities and the society that is completely immoral. It doesn't make sense. And again, the Bible says, get away from the city, circumcise yourself, separate yourself from societies that are against your law. Why are you following a legal law that is totally against your spiritual, moral conscience? Why are you doing it? That's the question. And sure, benefits, food stamps, maybe insurance. There's so many excuses we can use. And as we all die from our choices, as we destroy God's nature, hey, that's great. Wonderful.
Wow. All righty. We'll be right back in 3 minutes. And we do have a caller, so we'll take a call when we come back. All Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest tonight is Clint Richardson. His websites are realityblogger.wordpress.com and thecorporationnation.com. We do have a caller. Let's take him real quick. Chris in Tennessee. And we have very little time, so Chris, yeah. You're real speedy.
Well, I just wanted to take a shot. I don't really call into radio shows very often. I listen a lot. I just very quick, Lord bless both of you guys. I appreciate all the work that you do. I just don't know how to express it. It feels when you're of like mind and you're out here in this fictional world that we live in, it feels kind of lonely sometimes, but to hear you and many others that I've come across that have the same mindset and understanding of reality, it's good. And may the good Lord bless both of you. And I just want to thank you. And just keep up the good fight. This is the real fight. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Thanks, Chris.
Thanks. And may we find each other on this path. I mean, that's really the important part is to create our own people, right?
Sure. Sure. We do have another caller. Let's take Richie real quick in Louisiana. Real quick. Richie? Yeah.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you very much, Clint and Deanna. I know we don't have time, but Clint, is to put it simply in a word, an answer, a yes or no, is there a remedy to declare your independence and actually own property in the United States? Is there a legal title?
As a U.S. citizen in U.S. citizenship, the answer is no. Remedy is something that happens within. It's a reward generally in money or other something. The only way to be a property holder is to not be a citizen of the United States, which means that you must abjure the realm. You must become a private citizen of one of the states, not a United States citizen. Ah. That is called solution. Solution means end of contract. And so you'd be ending the contractual relationship as a public U.S. citizenship or a commercial vessel. Does that make sense?
Are you familiar with any people that successfully own property in America?
All the electors of president are landholders. Used to be I think it's still a rule that all the electors, the actual electors of president, the electoral college, etc., has to be a landholder. I interviewed a guy named KW who went through the process, got the court to declare him a private citizen. He's in Kentucky. And he actually sued the state for damages so that he could actually have money to purchase land. And this is a whole other, notion that, again, I don't think that's going far enough. Yes, absolutely, wholeheartedly, there are people out there who are following that particular way. But you have to make them see you as something. You can't just tell them that you are something. You actually have to make them in a declaratory judgment or other form. You have to make them see you, or you have to act religiously and have them not be able to respect you, I guess is the better way.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Richie, for calling in. And thank you, Clint, for being on the program.
Absolutely. And just to be clear, that's the difference between being public and being private. They are two completely different. The private owns the public. We are public. So thank you so much, Deanna.
Thank you, Clint. Take care. All righty. Bye-bye. Join me again tomorrow night. Same time, same place, here on RBN. Bye-bye.